You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to yet another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is the 21st of April, 2021. We just heard of the ridiculous conviction of the Minnesota policeman in the death of the scumbag criminal George Floyd, who, if there's anyone whose life didn't matter, it certainly was his. The entire story was make-believe, as I said, you know, with that first week when it came out. The trial was a farce. The coverage of the trial was a farce. And the regime threatened jurors, and they threatened the judicial system that if you don't convict this guy, we're going to destroy your state. They'll destroy it anyway. The same thing happened with the Charlottesville trials as well. The very notion of having a protest in front of a courthouse shows you how ignorant and controlled these people are. The point of a court, whether adversarial or otherwise, is to objectively and calmly comb through the evidence and try, with some basic rules of the game, to come up with as close to the truth as humanly possible. That's the formal understanding. So having threats of violence in front of the courthouse and protests don't make any sense. And of course the media has violently demanded this man's conviction for second degree, which people don't know what second degree is. That makes no sense in this case. We know that this man died of a fentanyl overdose and had severe heart condition. But the entire thing was tightly controlled from top to bottom. These jurors were aware that if they didn't convict, their lives were, I think several of their names were already leaked, that they would have been killed and nothing would have happened. What's going to happen now, of course, is that white lives are forfeit. They've been forfeit for some time. There is no white cop in the world that is going to intervene against a black man killing a white man. They're not going to intervene. It can't happen. They're terrified now of having their lives destroyed, their family destroyed, everyone around them killed, and their city burnt down. They'd simply rather have a nobody be killed than... So it's open season. As I've been saying for 30 years, other people are also starting to say this, get out of the city. You know, for a generation, I've been going on and on and on about the necessity of getting out of the city, and just as bad, get out of the suburbs. And with equal ferocity, I want to talk about getting away from conservatives. Conservatives are... You know, we know that Darwinism is false because conservatives still exist. They are ignorant. They are useless. These are suburbanites who, honest to God, you know, believe in liberal individualism and capitalism and, you know, technological progress. And but, you know, the family should be maintained, sort of. Conservatives today believe what Marxists believed 40 years ago. You know, conservatives used to condemn Martin Luther King two generations ago. Now, of course, they praise him, almost worship him. They're even starting to praise the Black Panthers from the late 60s. That's their purpose. They have no real intellectual background. They have no theory. They pretend to know something about Edmund Burke, but they never read him, because Edmund Burke would spit on everything that these people believe. They, honest to God, believe that Democrats, Republicans, this is a meaningful distinction. So, as I predicted 25 years ago, we live in a lawless world that we need to hang together. But I really question that, because really the nationalist movement largely is held together by a few eccentric personalities without an education, who spend most of their time stealing from me, using false names, and they take from me, they steal from Pierce. I mean, you know, people going way back, you know, they'll steal an idea and they'll give a one and two syllable version of it and claim that it's theirs. This is reaching, a really crisis proportions. These people don't have a single idea. There's somebody who we all know who just did something on, the necessity of understanding, schizophrenia. In understanding the establishment mind. A month ago, I did a two-part series on understanding narcissism as a way to understanding the establishment mind. You have people out there, again, claiming that they are the only ones talking about China as a national socialist state. You have people stealing this stuff. And the very fact that, you know, they do, it's to a great extent, largely based on, for so many of these people, they're on the right side of things, but they're not doing any of the work themselves. I mean, one thing, the only time that they, I'm not stolen from, is when the subject is so technical, like foreign exchange, or, you know, you need to know Russian to understand it, or something that's too technical for these people to just, you know, make one-liners out of it. And, you know, it's been very difficult to deal with the fact that, you know, I've completely revolutionized this movement. In fact, I've created this entire, you know, Orthodox, royalist, anti-capitalist, what we call anti-federalist movement. Most of it is from me. I mean, certainly the Putin stuff. The intellectual background, the Slavic stuff, U.S. foreign policy, U.S. military, and then, you know, certain things, you know, my critique of people trying to use Hegel's dialectics. Well, they can't really steal that because it is so difficult, that Hegel's language is so difficult that they can't do that one. And when I come up with something, I'll go to, now people are talking about Burma. They're talking about Xinjiang. When I see, you know, five or six nationalist blogs all of a sudden concerned with the Burmese military government, I'm pretty sure that they took it from me. No one gave it. No one could know where this place was before I started talking about 20 years ago. It's been resurrected, and of course I've been. And now all of a sudden you're starting to see it. All of a sudden, you know, can you imagine the blatant. And, you know, these people cite sources all over the place, except mine, except my site, except me. And, it's extremely discouraging. It's extremely discouraging. And I've, it's bad enough we're in this situation, but we don't have a movement of any real intellectual, foundation. And you have people who, all over the place. I've mentioned many of them by name, who will simply just take my stuff and claim that it's theirs and then make money off it. On the Syrian stuff. A lot of the foreign policy issues. And I guess my next prediction is you're going to start seeing right-wingers talking about Christianity as a Greek ethnic phenomenon. I'm starting to see that. I was the first one to mention that as part of our movement. You're going to start seeing that. The nominalist stuff went from zero mentions to recently, you know, I'm starting to see it more and more. Again, that's fairly technical, so you don't have a whole lot of people who can even talk about it. Rejection of the Cold War. You know, this is on and on and on. And it's discouraging because all I ever really wanted was a thank you. Was a citation. Just, you know, this guy, that's all. I'm very careful about citing my sources. I come up with something and a couple months later, I'm seeing it all over the place. And the worst part of it all is that often these guys don't know how to, they don't have a deep knowledge of the subject. So if they ever get challenged, they don't know what they're doing. Michael Hoffman has been complaining about this for years and years and years. You know, the stuff with the Talmud and the Zohar, stuff that he, you know, mined the sources for. And he said the same thing. He said people will put this stuff out and they don't understand they cut and paste it. It's all the same things over and over again, but they don't know the sources. They don't know where this comes from. They don't know how to understand the rabbinic, foundation for this stuff and the historical, but Hoffman does. And so they sound like fools when they're ever challenged by somebody. So you have a lot of people taking things that it took me 20 years to develop without the intellectual background to defend it. And so, and then the regime can go to the conservatives and say, all these people support communists. They support, you know, Chinese communists or you know, Soviet client states in Syria or whatever. And it's extremely discouraging. So when we talk about our people hanging together, we talk about our people at all, you know, you don't have really a firm intellectual background. It's a very, very, even intellectually speaking, a very poorly organized idea. The solution to the problem, of course, for people to focus on issues that they know a lot about. You know, two or three things that could really make, instead of having blogs that deal with every single political topic, as if they could have an opinion on every single topic. No, you can't have an opinion on foreign exchange. You know, on the one hand, the technical, international political economy. And also sit there and talk about, you know, genetics. And the vaccines and all this. You could end up just doing nothing more than spouting slogans. When an expert actually challenges you, you're going to fall apart. You have to focus on a few things that you really know about. And all of us take a few things like this, and then together, we could put together a very... Your Radio Albion is a lot like that. You have our people who specialize in a few areas. You go to the station, the website, and you're seeing a tremendous, very highbrow collection of specialists. And, of course, this has a lot to do with humility. You know. These are some of the people who you ask them about something technical. They can't say, I don't know. So they say something stupid because they don't really know. They'll reduce everything to one-liners. It's okay to say, I don't know something. I've done it before. No one died. No one fell apart. So that's really been, you know, the discouraging nature of the regime, the COVID stuff, the Minneapolis stuff, and now open season on whites. I haven't seen a white person in a advertisement in a year. The only time I see a white man in advertisement, if he's promoted, is very weak. We are in an absolutely apocalyptic era, which, you know, is in the next point is. The amateur theologians, I'm warning you guys, I'm seeing a lot of these Protestants out there, they're putting out, you know, things talking about, you know, COVID and connecting them to the book of Daniel. Oh my, please. All the stuff I'm reading about, you know, COVID and the end times, the most superficial analysis, I'm warning you people, please stay away from these guys. Everyone is their own pope, everyone's their own theologian, everything is very superficial. And they are making jerks of themselves. Theology, you know, biblical or not, that's extremely, extremely difficult. My opinions personally on these matters are tentative. They have to be. Since the late 80s, I've been obsessed with this stuff, and only in the last 10 years have I put out a tentative opinion on this stuff. It takes a very long time even have a tentative point of view on this stuff. Opinions, when you put on an opinion with any kind of authority, you are making claims about yourself. And if the claims aren't true, you really don't have an authority on this subject, you're poisoning the well. You're doing a lot of damage to people, especially younger people who read this stuff and don't know that you're full of it. It sounds good. And the confusion on in the nationalist movement is just as bad as the confusion anywhere else. The people who claim to be able to save us are just as bad as the people in power now. Everyone has their favorite theory. It's always very superficial. They quote one another. But more than anything else, they don't have the fundamental historical and philosophical basis from which an opinion can derive. It's based on an issue-by-issue concern, which is no way to go about this. Issues are media, issues are commodities that the regime puts together and puts out in these media sound bites. Issues have nothing to do with politics, they have nothing to do with power. The word politics, of course, has been abused beyond belief. But these fundamental issues, very few people are even talking about it. Opinions have to come from a deeper ontological point of view. They don't hang in midair. And it's not easy to do. But, I spent, 30 years poring over the most difficult historical texts in Greek and in Latin and in Slavonic. In this civilization, both East and West, only to find out that, people who do a one- and two-syllable version of this are going to do better, and people follow them because they have it's easier to understand. They have no comprehension, but it's easier to market a one- and two-syllable version of things. It's extremely frustrating. Marxists and anarchists actually have, believe it or not, a very solid theoretical background in 19th century German materialism. And they've been respectful of, dialectics and surplus value and all this stuff, alienation. And but political theory is not a strong, it doesn't even exist in the nationalist movement at all. And I'm seeing people giving lectures on the essence of nationalism and stuff like that, and it is embarrassing. And it's absolutely discouraging. And of course these people are making money off it and they're publishing it. So it's something, the work is getting harder and harder to do in this environment. But speaking of specialized topics, I wanted to deal with what's happened in Belarus. The Western press, of course, has not covered this. Again, partially out of ignorance, partially out of simply not being told otherwise. There was an American attempt to overthrow the government of Lukashenko and to murder, to slaughter his cabinet. And this occurred just a few days ago. Things like the Czech munitions explosion and Navalny's nonsense has essentially run interference for what's happening here. You have two conspirators. One, of course, educated in America, like most of them are, and one in the Belarusian military, were captured by the Russian State Security Agency. They taped a lot of their meetings without understanding this. And they were, of course, turned over to the Belarusian KGB in Minsk. The U.S., no question, the U.S. is involved in this. No one denies it at this point. As the street violence that the U.S. created failed miserably, this is actually their last-ditch effort. You see what they do in the U.S., where they will simply burn the place down to get what they want, with full media elite support. Conservatives will cower in fear. And you see that they certainly have no problem doing this elsewhere. Belarus is extremely, very important, very significant as a very powerful, very small state, technologically advanced, and really the gateway, like Ukraine, the gateway into Russia. This is extremely significant, what's happening here. There was an attempt to murder his entire government. And in other words, it's a physical elimination. And the establishment of the French Revolutionary Committee of Public Safety. There's different names for it. They call it the Committee of Concord, which comes straight out of the French Revolution. So this certainly isn't a local movement. Lukashenko made his announcement on, I believe, it was the 17th of April, that the American Special Services were preparing an assassination attempt on him and his family, and he appealed to the Russians, and they turned over these recordings of these American-trained and one living in America as a violent French Revolutionary coup. The murder of Anwar Sadat in Egypt is their model, as they said, and also the attempted murder of Nicolas Maduro is another example. And you're seeing this in St. Petersburg, they caught the Ukrainian consul red-handed here, collecting classified information. And you have a mass expulsion of diplomatic personnel. Now, certainly it did not begin on April 17th, but it hit at least the Slavic press on that day. So-called opposition media in Belarus is entirely controlled by the U.S. and the European Union. And they invented the story that these opposition leaders are disappearing because they're such a threat to the Belarusian government, despite having only a handful of supporters. On April 11th, Yuri Yazunkovich and Alexander Feduta fell off the radar. And you see the same thing, like in September of 2000, Gregory Gongadze disappeared in Ukraine. You see the exact same thing. What's happening here is you have a purely what amounts to the identical structure of the French Revolution that's going to be imposed with all the killings, the murder of Lukashenko and his family and his entire cabinet. Yuris Yankovich, whose name is Yuris Yankovich, as I mentioned, who came from Ukraine, and then Yankovich it was connected with the U.S. In Kiev. He graduated, of course, from the Ukrainian Academy of Banking in 2007, and then moved quickly to the United States. And then all of a sudden he goes silent. And he became a citizen, and eventually was sneaked back into the Slavic world. He had a law practice in the United States, of course, as a dual citizen, working with immigrants. And he was intensely corrupt. He took advances from clients, never gave it back. He eventually had his license suspended. And then, as that happens, he shows up in Belarus and is part of the so-called protest movement. Now, I've mentioned in every one of these color revolutions that the leadership, with almost without exception, is educated in the United States. They all speak English. Every one of these color revolutions that I've mentioned has, whether it be in the Islamic world, the Slavic world, the Asian world, are educated in the United States, have American bank accounts, have speak English, and put everything, of course, in American terms. And Navalny's case, the minute he was convicted of his crimes, ran to America and somehow began doing graduate work in Yale, despite not really having not really being an academic of any kind. And that's when he was recruited. And this, I've mentioned this over and over again. All of these so-called Slavs and Muslims all having been educated in the U.S. if you go to Aramco, the Saudi, the state oil firm, people will say that, well, this is not an American-dominated firm. This is owned by the Saudi government. If you go to every single person on that board, you'll see that they're educated at an American university. You'll see every one of them, despite having an Arabic-sounding name, speak fluent English. And you see them in places like, you know, New Mexico, Iowa State, you know, Ohio State. And then that took from that and showed every color revolution you have American-educated people. These are people who are put in positions by the CIA with a firmly American agenda. They don't have really any connection in the countries that they come from. And these people kind of disappear for a while, and then when the regime needs them, they're sent into whatever country is under attack. In this case, though, you have an extreme situation where you have the planned mass murder of Belarusian ruling officials. Not just Lukashenko, but his family. So this is more than just a matter of so-called regime change. Back in August, I spoke of as the riots began to develop, make-believe stories about, you know, stolen elections, you know, as if the Americans could ever talk about a stolen election. Lukashenko received about 72% of the vote, which is about his level of popularity. Same thing for Putin. He's a very popular man for a very good reason. The 78.1% was his approval rating at the time of these elections. That's an independent poll just days before the election. And you have, you know, an Azerbaijani electoral observer talking about just, you know, how free and fair this was. They even accepted foreigners organizing this election, which, of course, you know, the Belarusians actually permitted for the sake of, and having oversight from abroad is an insult. They have no right to oversee their election. The problem that the U.S. has is that these are very popular men. Even, you know, the CIS election observers, Sergei Lebedev, said that the elections in Belarus are well organized. But the U.S. condemned the election even before it happens. They have the same condemnation. Every election, they just put out the same thing. They just fill in the blanks. And they put it out often before the election even takes place. In fact, the U.S. condemned the election before it happened by a few weeks. And, of course, the protest movement was already in place. I'm going to be dealing with pretty soon the recent exoneration of Hezbollah and the Syrian government in the murder of Hariri in Lebanon, which is extremely significant. Very few people are talking about it. And the ridiculous mythology, you know, Johnson's Law, where the Western journalistic establishment invented an entire story as to how this man was killed and who was responsible. It's the exact same pattern over and over and over again. Hariri was anti-Syrian, pro-American, and, of course, was one of the top 100 richest men in the world. Wanted to privatize everything, brought Israeli and American bankers in, and, of course, wanted the Syrian troops out of the country so the entire place could be handed over to the Israelis, and the Israelis could simply invade it and take it over. And they failed to do that. They've been defeated in Lebanon several times. I spoke about the Three Seas Initiative. This is as elites in Poland attempting to draw Belarus away from Russia. The Three Seas Initiative is a network of pro-Western states between Germany and Russia, reinvigorating Polish power and creating a division between Germany, who has rejected American sanctions on Russia, and Russia herself. So the Three Seas is an organization of 12 countries, Austria, Bulgaria, Croatia, Czechia, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, and Slovenia. And all of these really are just a front for Western oil and gas interests. Transit highway connecting Lithuania and Greece, north and south. Natural gas system using ports in Poland and Croatia. And this system, anyway, it's been analyzed in 2019 in the RAND Corporation, that these NGOs are tightly connected with the U.S. federal government and American capital. And the RAND report spoke in detail about destabilizing Belarus's political system through a make-believe color revolution, the point being to strike a blow against Putin's Russia. The U.S. has to offer financial support to actually the current government, the Lukashenko's government, and to create, in doing so, reason to create a division with Moscow. Now, that was one theory that the RAND Corporation put out to, at one point, you know, infiltrate the government and military and creating divisions with Russia and divisions within the government itself. This is what happened in Iraq, the first Iraq war. You had a first-rate and highly experienced Iraqi military that early on defeated. No one knows this. You have to read the Russian intelligence reports. But the U.S. and Great Britain were defeated in the first Iraq war. The only way that Saddam Hussein lost was a Turkish threat, which had to split his army in half, and going to Iraqi generals and paying them off. And that was the same concept here. I have a whole, my Patreon account, I have a whole paper on the lies of the American casualty reports from the Iraq wars. That the American casualty figures are mythological and invented from top to bottom. So, in the Belarusian case, you had the husband and wife, Sergei Tikhanovsky, and of course his wife, with the feminine version of that, Tikhanovskaya, darlings in the media. They're god and goddesses in this pagan world the media has created. Up until a few months ago, no one in Belarus knew who they were. Just like Navalny, you know, a few months ago, no one knew who he was. And what happened is that, according to the election law, an initiative group has to be registered to nominate a presidential candidate. And because Sergei was in jail at the time, his movement could not be, and he was a felon, his movement couldn't be registered. So his wife filed a documentation in his place. And unfortunately, you have to be there. You can't just be in jail. You can't have your wife do this for you. And that's why his party was rejected by the commission. And then, you know, he was released from jail at some point, and one of his wife's, because he, you know, his wife took over his election campaign. And this guy, by the way, is a blogger. He came from out of nowhere, very little support. He showed up at one of his wife's campaign rallies and punched a woman supporting Lukashenko. The details have never been quite made available. And then when he was arrested, you had a kind of a mini riot take place. And this is why this guy was in jail. So we went to jail and then was released, and this happened again. So without any investigation, Amnesty International, which is a front from American capital, claimed it was an provocation and that the woman was lying. So much for believing the women. So the police raided his mother's house, found $900,000, of course, in American currency. He was going to escape. And this was all dismissed by the Western NGOs with no investigation. But they could barely get the required 100,000 signatures to register a candidacy. So even if they had a legitimate claim, they didn't have the people. Liberal candidates like Viktor Babarka had a full third of his signatures rejected, since the people were either dead or non-existent. He misrepresented his income. This is what these people in the West and the so-called Belarusian opposition said. This is proof of oppression. Tikhanovskaya produced, I think, 109,000 signatures, and 104,000 were accepted as legitimate. Lukashenko had about 2 million signatures, and roughly 1.93 million were accepted as valid. So there's no discrimination here. They eliminate a lot of invalid signatures from everyone. But these, you know, these liberal candidates, Dmitriev, Tsapkala, they could barely get 100,000. And for some of these people, roughly about 75,000 were accepted by the commission as legitimate. Tikhanovsky was a YouTube blogger. He had no status other than that. And he promoted, you know, typical American liberalism on his channel. And at the time of, as this was going on, he had about 150,000 subscribers. At his height, with all of this publicity, he had about 275,000. The fact that the page is still up, even in Belarus, shows that there is no coercion here. The man got no more than 150,000 supporters on his YouTube channel, let alone people who were willing to sign and go to these rallies. And this has come up over and over again in all these color revolutions, where they have no support. The Cedar Revolution in Lebanon, color revolution there, which I'll deal with some other time. I have a paper I'm putting out on this. The opposition rallies against them were monstrous. The pro-Iranian, pro-Syrian Shiite rally had 1.5 million in Beirut. And that was reported by the Washington Times. The Western-supported, NGO-supported movement could get no more than 40,000. This happens everywhere. We see it with, you know, Trump versus Biden. They have no popular support. Navalny has a handful of supporters. The agenda that he promotes has nothing to do with any kind of Russian tradition or any kind. It's simple liberalism, which has no foundation. The same goes in Lebanon or Armenia or Russia or Belarus or all the other places that we've covered, especially Asian, Thailand, which I've dealt with before, and Burma, which I've been dealing with for, 20 years now. There is no local foundation for any of this. It's funny, in the Ukrainian case in 2014 and the Cedar Revolution in Lebanon, one of the demands of these spontaneous protests was to remove state interference from the central bank and to begin the privatization of state industries. Now, does that sound like something like the average person on the street is going to be worried about? Of course not. They'll talk about, someone gets shot, and then they'll talk about that, demanding signatures, but no one's, all of a sudden, they're going to start talking about privatization, printing more money, bringing the Western banks in to take over the bank. Is that something that the average person is going to demand in their movement? And you see this in every one of these color revolutions. It doesn't get covered by the press. But again, these are often too complicated for the press to even deal with. And even if they did, they're going to put it in a way that, and experts get very confusing. Experts are pretty useless in this area. Both in journalism and in academia, because if they want to keep their job, they have to do what they're told. There's so many people who are willing to take their place. These people live in fear. I know some of them. So in the Belarusian case, you have no support whatsoever for a liberal agenda. And the street protests petered out. And this happens before. They had a handful of people. The West makes fun of it. The West lies about their numbers. And so this is all they had left. The creation of a Committee for Public Safety, or the Committee of Concord, to replace the Office of the Presidency. And that's where it stays now. And this was going to be a mass killing. This is going to be like the December's Revolution in Russia, which brought Nicholas I to power. These are oligarchic, aristocratic movements using slogans, basic liberal slogans, which they don't really believe. If you dig deeper, you start seeing really what their agenda is, and it's usually a very technical issue concerning foreign policy and finance and everything else that supports only oligarchs. In Ukraine in 2014, like the average person on the street in a country that's now almost fourth world, they're going to be worried about joining the EU. Like that could even remotely be an issue that these people care about under the circumstance. It's so blatantly artificial and blatantly imposed, but Johnson's Law being what it is, and you have no different, politicians and bureaucrats and, of course, your NGO leader. You go to Amnesty International, any of these groups, go to their website and go to their, usually it's called Partners, the Partners page, and you'll see all the corporations that finance them. They have to release these to maintain their tax-exempt status. Every one of these groups, you'll have a list of American corporations. That's where their money comes from. Therefore, they're fronts for American capital. Remember, in the Western world, the state, the government, is a privatized group. They're not separate from the oligarchy. You have a few occasional exceptions. Richard Nixon in the Vietnam War, briefly Donald Trump, where you had a separation between the government and the ruling class. But that's, you know, largely history now. Every once in a while, you'll see a disconnect there, but it doesn't take long. And they'll take someone like Nixon or Trump, who was very popular compared with what the regime was putting up, and treat them like absolute subhumans. And it'll come out and demanding their murder, as the newspapers did in 2016, and again in 2020. We know what's happened in this trial and everything else. The stuff that Trump was condemned for and impeached for, you have that disgusting Negress, Maxine, what the hell her name is, on the street demanding the killing of white people. But killing white people, that's a normal demand now. You see this everywhere. And of course, no one will ever get in trouble. It won't matter. And it'll be forgotten in a few years. In a few weeks. And everything, every point of view now is censored. Even mentioning Waters' point of view here, and even saying anything about it is banned from Facebook. Any mention of this stuff is immediately removed from Facebook. I just put a bunch of quotes on the cops trial, and they were immediately removed. I mean, immediately. It wasn't, someone didn't look at it. It's just for certain keywords, I mean, they're simply removed from there. That's how this is working. I'm noticing too, in so many, we used to have comment sections in the past. Many of these newspapers and news organizations have removed their comment sections entirely. I did note that on YouTube, the Minneapolis news station, the few that actually have comments are overwhelmingly on our side. No one believes that that scumbag's life mattered. The policeman did absolutely nothing wrong. And that's been shown 1,000 times over. That's not the issue here. So let me summarize here what we're talking about as far as Belarus is concerned. This, I believe, was reported in RT, but not in any depth. And this was on the 18th of April. Of at least two people, one of whom is an American citizen, as I mentioned, having a law practice in the U.S., was arrested for plotting an armed insurrection against Belarusian president. And that the U.S., without question, sanctioned this and was financing it. And you had several, even earlier than that, as I mentioned, several other figures were arrested for the same reasons. You had these protests, and the RT is talking about mass protests. That didn't exist. Belarus is one of the most prosperous countries in the CIS. And this conspiracy, of course, was no surprise to anybody. But this is so blatant, using the French Revolutionary language, that by itself is evidence of this. So it was on Saturday. The plot to kill Lukashenko and top Belarusian officials was revealed then, and the national broadcaster ONT ran a story naming the conspirators and exposing their plans. And there was a Zoom meeting that's been translated, and I've mentioned who these people are. I mentioned Feduta, and he's the one who mentioned the murder of Anwar Sadat as the model for this plan. What he called the successful rotation of national leadership. Sadat was assassinated during a parade in 1981 by the Muslim Brotherhood, and Lukashenko was supposed to be killed in the Victory Day or Freedom Day parade, which is coming up. Now, Yuri Zinkovich, the lawyer, was, you know, always in kind of trouble on both sides of the Atlantic, and he said, "Let us now finish off Luka and decide who will rule Belarus later." Had absolutely nothing to do with the ballot box. This was about a military coup run by the CIA with the purpose of killing the Belarusian cabinet. And on Sunday, the FSB announced this, and it was tipped off by the Belarusian KGB that Zinkovich and Fedutov were going to Moscow to meet what they claimed were Belarusian military men, generals who were opposed to Lukashenko. Just like in the Iraqi case, though, no question, and even in Lebanon, where four Lebanese generals were arrested and put in prison with no charges and no warrant for the sake of forcing them to give false testimony against Syria. And the FSB has been clear. They're talking about killing almost the entire leadership of Belarus. A military coup and a power blackout, which has been planned. And that they had a so-called partisan movement who had secret bases within Belarus on the border in Ukraine. Again, this isn't alleged. This is what's been exposed. Hidden cameras show these meetings in the ONT expose in the Belarusian press. And they talked about Zinkovich and Fedutov talking about how they're going to carry out this coup and who they're going to kill. And of course, you're not going to do this with military men unless you have a lot of money and foreign intelligence support. That Lukashenko has to be disposed of, as I said, and at least 30 members of the cabinet and those in sub-cabinet positions need to be murdered. The rest need to be interned literally within the first hour of the coup. And Lukashenko says, obviously, this is definitely, without question, the work of foreign intelligence, CIA or FBI. And he made that very public. Zinkovich was an American agent, as I've shown. He was a lawyer, dual U.S.-Belarusian citizenship. Not only was a lawyer, but he's been disbarred for completely fraudulent work. His law degree, I'm sure, is all phony. And then, as I mentioned, Kurtsutov, the leader of the so-called opposition party, financed by the U.S., also to try to stop this same conspiracy. So then Roysa 1, the Russian TV channel, showed the hidden camera footage on Sunday. And they're talking about, you know, they're admitting all of this stuff and who they're going to kill and everything else. And that this is what's going to lead to democracy growing up of its own accord. And what they said they should curate was the term that they used. I didn't hear the actual Russian or Belarusian. And that's referred to their taking over of the press, the courts, the parliament, and the justice ministries. And not to mention the Central Election Commission. So these people were either could be completely taken over and their top leadership murdered. And then he said that this is going to be financially profitable for us. Because he says that Lukashenko, and their exact words were, he has a nest egg somewhere that could be simply taken quietly if the occasion arises. So there's no question that these Zoom meetings admit foreign support, American support, a lot of money, and mass murder. One of the others is named Pavel Kuzenko, who lives in New York City. They had an online discussion club. Whether he was directly a part of the conspiracy or not, or just part of the online discussion club, is another matter. The guy in Seattle, Alexander Perepichko, that the coup will be a prime way to get rid of the bloody dictatorship. And it would be unprofessional not to discuss various regime changes in Belarus. Of course, he's talking about using violence and killing. Now, they're not talking about elections. They've lost those. They know that they can't beat him in elections. They simply can't do it. Lukashenko, like Putin, is extremely popular. I've been through, and I've said this elsewhere, the more technical elements of Lukashenko's victory last year, talking about the, you know, setting these ridiculous political parties up that have maybe 90,000 supporters at most, and that with millions of dollars from American corporations through Amnesty International and all these groups. Remember, George Soros is one of many. There's really nothing special about Soros. He's just, you know, he's elderly at the end of his career. He's willing to take the fall. But he's just a figurehead for thousands of organizations and oligarchs from Wall Street and London and New York City and D.C. who finance the regime around the world. The problem with countries like this, it could be everyone from Lebanon to Russia, to Belarus, to China, through Western China, Burma, Thailand, etc. The problem there is that these governments have been generally successful. The Iranian plot failed completely. They're attacking trying to create a nuclear fallout over there. We talked about that last week. And so I've been over the technical, mechanical way that these things have been fraudulently accomplished. But the truth is that Lukashenko's vote was actually lower than his popularity rating. Popularity rating at the time of the election was about 78%. He got something like 72%. Fairly substantial turnout. Now, it was August 27, 2011. I wrote an article that became very famous. It was on the Occidental Observer page. And it's called Social Nationalism, the Political Thought of Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus. And it has well over 100 comments. And this was when I first, I've been talking about him on my own website before, but this was the first time I put something out on the web and at another site and actually well-known a website. Johnson's Law, which I actually mentioned in this article, I talk about how, you could pretty much say anything about this guy. That he's called a dictator, a savage, a mass murderer, everything else. And because they talk like this, and they continue to talk like this, the plot to slaughter the cabinet and create the Committee of Concord or the Committee of Public Safety, depending on who you talk to, using those exact terms, is legitimate in their minds. Belarus is very important. I've been saying since, the beginning of the 2000s. Because Lukashenko is a firm and blatant, what we would call, out front social nationalist or national socialist. He's been talking like this for many years, which is why he has been under absolute brutal attack. The unlamented John McCain condemned him over and over again. The Weekly Standard. People like Counterpunch were exposing this, after I did it. But, you have a country the size of Kansas with a very tiny diaspora in America. Why in the heck was there such a tension? It's like Burma. Why is such a tension to this? And not only is it, Russian education, gas, oil technology, the science, natural resources, which Belarus being small but is very literate, very technologically advanced, deep into the cutting edge technological inventions in all of these fields. You've had tremendous, Belarus is more prosperous than Western Europe without question. McCain was talking about it while he was still, wandering around. And the the sanctions were first, started in Russia with Belarus. And of course, people like McCain, the whole neocon movement has received millions from oil firms, America, Israel, the Netherlands, and Great Britain. But since, the spectacular economic growth since 1994 in Belarus, huge diversification, the trade surplus, low unemployment, this has been consistent since the early 90s. Back 10 years ago, the TNS Global Research Organization in London polled 10,000 Belarusians, and that was again, this is in 2010, Lukashenko had a popularity rating of 75%. That hasn't changed at all these years later. But what's the basis of his popularity? That's really the point here. And Belarus was one of the first places that I began to focus on, laying out the intellectual, the institutional, the philosophical, even religious foundations for the war against global liberalism. You had in the early 90s, you had Russia and Ukraine brought to fourth world status. The creation of the oligarchs, the Jewish oligarchs, with money from the State Department, Wall Street, IMF, Harvard University especially, took over these countries and ran it as an oligarchic dictatorship, which is, again, what this Committee of Public Safety, this Committee of Concord was going to be. But the Russian and Ukrainian economies were liquidated, their capital taken out of the country, taken over by these people. But in 94, Lukashenko takes over and demands that these people leave the country. From that moment on, he was called the last dictator in Europe. And, you know, Harvard Law School, and that's not a surprise, this guy is also a lawyer, financed by Radio Liberty, Soros, not to mention CIA, is essential to all of this. But his record in creating the National Socialist system there, they did not have the breakdown that you had in Russia and Ukraine at the time. Belarusian banks were entirely owned by the state. They outperformed European banks even after the breakdown of 2008. Even after that decay in 2008, state-owned banks increased their capitalization by almost 20%. That's at the same time that the Western taxpayer was forced to bail out the banks in the U.S. and elsewhere. Remember, Lukashenko refused to institute any lockdown measures in Belarus. He condemned the COVID nonsense as a giveaway to the state, as a giveaway to the regime, as a giveaway to pharmaceutical industries, as a way to shut down actual independent newspapers and the church. And he was very clear about that. You had massive increases in agricultural production all throughout the time where everything else was falling apart. When Belarusian unemployment went to 4% in 96, this was considered a huge crisis. The man stopped privatization. I wrote many years ago, quoting the official Belarusian doctrine on development, and he made it clear that it was the regime, and especially the Jews, who were behind this mass privatization in Eastern Europe to essentially steal the labor of these people for a century. The market is largely a myth. Capitalism is simply oligarchy. But it does have a use. But a nationally oriented state has to be has to decide this, not the oligarchy. His notion of the third way was developed even, you know, in the early 90s. And his model, as he said in 2002, his model is based on strong and efficient state authority, as he said, social justice and public order. So he had massive economic growth without massive inequality. That there has to be a state sector because everything else would be privatized otherwise. And you know, the private sector has to be guided. The private sector is the oligarchic sector. And they're often foreign and have nothing to do. Educated in the U.S. have nothing to do with local tradition or Belarus at all. And this wasn't campaign rhetoric. This is their actual policy. The state was more powerful than capital. And if you actually believe that the free market exists, and the McCains of the world talked about, you know, markets in the same way that they talked about overthrowing Lukashenko's government. The problem was is that he was incredibly successful. Remember, the free market is a slogan. It's a means of legitimizing an already existent oligarchy. There was never a time where there was this pure equality and the free market came into existence, you know, in Adam Smith's point of view. It existed because those of the abilities of those capable of taking over during the decay of the Middle Ages in Europe, the Enlightenment. The old social protections for the medieval peasant fell apart. And in the rush for progress, capital was taken over, the monasteries were disintegrated. And to justify that, they created something, you know, roughly capitalism in the free market as an ideology. And this is something that Lukashenko had been talking about. But his achievements since 1994, has been tremendous. He has saved Belarusian industry, as everywhere else it would have been disintegrated and taken out of the country. He saved it and maintained those jobs, and it's competitive. You have almost no crime. low crime rate, safety in the street. You had no immigration at all from this ridiculous refugee invented crisis here. Crime is essentially non-existent. So by the mid-90s, the criminal bosses that existed at the time began to disappear. Again, all condemned by the U.S., by the way. The high-tech sector was subsidized, and it's become the dominant high-tech sector in the area. In 2005, he created the concept of the Park of High Tech. These are separate zones in the country where the best of their scientific establishment would be subsidized to promote very specific areas, things that the state needed at the time. And it's, you know, every year is a tremendous, the subsidies are more than made up for by what these people create. They even created his own space agency, starting in 2012. Now, some of you know that I think the entire idea of NASA is nonsense. Nothing good has ever come of launching things into space. There's no diseases have ever been cured. No scientific discoveries have ever come out of this. We have no idea what's going on in the oceans. But they want to talk about, you know, science fiction. And there's an ideological foundation for it. But the space, you know, the space, this is pure fiction, ideological fiction. Nothing good has ever come out of it. It's a huge waste of money. And the infrastructure, more importantly, has been not only updated, but is one of the best in Europe. Trolleys, buses have been updated. New stations, railway, public transportation is the best in Eastern Europe. The roads, the renovation, of course, the pipeline transport, the energy system. And the drive now, believe it or not, is to make Belarus energy independent, which is very possible. The unemployment rate today, not just officially, but even from international NGOs, is 0.5%. So right now in Italy, it's about 20%, in Spain, 26%, in Greece, I would say coming close to half. Officially, it's 30%, but it's far higher than that. Macedonia, it's 30%. It has the lowest infant mortality rate. And I think the lowest infant mortality rate in all of Europe, let alone in Eastern Europe. You have massive growth in every sector. And when he condemned the COVID idea, and of course in Belarus you have a lower incidence of infection. That doesn't matter. Very few people are dying from this. But you had very low infection rates in Belarus despite having zero lockdowns. Every area of social development, Belarus is absolutely dominated in this area. Everyone. They have absolutely revitalized and revolutionized the economy. The countryside, small towns have been completely revitalized. You have a huge social welfare building, as Putin has done recently, subsidies for large families. Population growth has been a daily event. Again, you had zero unemployment rate throughout most of the 90s. You absolutely had zero. It's unbelievable. And because you have targeted investment rather than the so-called free market. I mean, you could go on and on and on of what this man has done. So there is no foundation whatsoever for any protests. Lukashenko was slated to be killed by the CIA. Now it's been exposed openly because of this threat. He's an open mockery. And of course, they have no debt. Open mockery of the liberal system. He is the gateway into Russia. They're an extremely powerful military, however small it might be. We can go on and on here. They are a huge threat to the regime. And, of course, cost of living is very low. So that, you know, you could have a salary of $400. And like in Russia, you know, a salary of $1,800 a month sounds awful. And in the U.S., they'll mention that without context. But the truth is, it really amounts to something like $7,500, because the cost of living is fairly low. No one ever talks about that in the West. So this is what's happening there. This is the first time where you have a blatant exposure of mass murder from the U.S., and it derives from the fact that Joe Biden doesn't know where he is. He has no concept of what he's doing. So that means you have all these, you know, secret forces who now can operate using his name. He'll sign anything you put in front of him. And it's perfect for these people. So that's why you're going to see a lot of this stuff. They'll blame Biden. He doesn't know where he is. He's going to die soon anyway. His vice president doesn't know anything. Again, she will sign anything that's put in front of her. So the successors of John McCain, especially in the U.S. military, are able to work secretly using this ridiculous administration as simply as a front man. So you're going to start seeing more and more of this. So using the very language from the French Revolution and talking about the Great Terror and everything else, if people are actually talking about this, with CIA and American military assistance, as the American military has surrounded the country. And again, pretty sure, there's going to be a whole lot of people going to steal this and start talking about it like they discovered it yesterday. But this is very important. This is a blatant discovery. It's been covered up. And as, the people who control Joe Biden are declaring war on Russia, this is the beginning of what they're trying to do here. They need to kill this man because he's one of the most popular politicians in Europe. Nationalism and National Socialism work wherever they've been tried, under the worst of circumstances. Now, when it's connected with Russia and China and everything else, this is the last gasp of a dying regime. You don't ban books. You don't shut down universities. You don't shut down millions of accounts, fire professors, destroy, liquidate entire cities. You don't do this because you're secure and happy. You do it because your regime is dying. We live in both a disgusting era and an invigorating era. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.